Hello, and welcome to The Psychonaut Show with Dr. JKB. This is John K. Burton, MD, psychiatrist, psychoanalyst. And on this podcast, your captain on these voyages to explore strange new worlds in inner space. Our mission is to uncover knowledge that will ultimately make us more effective, more connected, and more attractive in our daily lives. In this episode, we are going to be exploring the concept of dynamic conflict. Now, when we hear the word conflict, it sounds like something that we really want to avoid. But what we're going to be talking about in this episode is that conflict is really what life is made from. At least our inner lives are made out of conflict, and we need to understand it. You remember the episode on the return of the repressed? Well, dynamic conflict is really the thing that we're always trying to repress, and by understanding it, we can move forward and not get bogged down by it, not avoid it, but embrace it. And what we mean when we say dynamic conflict, dynamic just means that it is the force in our minds. Dynamic comes from the Greek, which means force. And dynamic is what we use when we talk about what's going on in the unconscious, what's going on in our minds. It's dynamic conflict because it's not international conflict or interpersonal conflict. It's between forces in our minds. So I want to tell you about a rock star who had a problem with dynamic conflict. Now, this woman was the lead singer of a band that was up and coming. Maybe they weren't quite rock stars yet, but they weren't far off either. They were getting a lot of attention and a lot of spotlight, and she is the lead singer, especially so. And this band played really serious rock music that was very intense and sexy, and as the performer, she needed to feel really present in her body. And this woman, let me be clear, she did not have an eating disorder. She just wanted to feel lean, feel alert, present on stage in an intense way, be sexy and perform. Because she was in that business, she was around a lot of people who partied all the time, you know, overate, overdrank, stayed up all night and everything. And she had to be very disciplined to not drink too much, to watch her diet, to make sure she exercised in the way she wanted to, get enough sleep, etc. And she had to be very disciplined, but she was able to. But here's the thing, as she started to make progress towards her physical goal of having the body that she wanted to have, all of a sudden these anxieties would come up, the opposite of what you would expect, not feeling happy, but feeling worried about others judging her, feeling worried particularly about people being envious of her and hostile towards her, feeling like they thought of her as, quote, one of those narcissistic assholes. That was her word that came to mind. And then as she dealt with this anxiety, or she had to find a way to deal with this anxiety, she would start slipping on her diet. She would drink a little bit too much. She'd stay out late with friends. She'd overeat, lose her discipline, and she'd start to lose track of her goal. Now, this is what I call psychic whiplash. That is when we're in this kind of equilibrium with conflict and we move in one direction on one side of the conflict, the forces that want to keep us in that equilibrium start to pull us back. And they can be very insidious. They come up in ways that we don't recognize. We don't see them for what they are. We just feel anxious about them and they take an effect. But the effect is to bring us back to that equilibrium, which was for her not meeting her goal of having a lean, sexy body. So we had to understand where these fears were coming from. It wasn't enough to just talk herself out of them. We had to understand them. And in this case, when she thought about this phrase, one of those narcissistic assholes, what came to mind was her father. And her father was this larger-than-life guy who loved to have a lot of attention, was very big in society, was very into himself physically and into himself monetarily, liked to really be ostentatious. And because of this, he had ruined the family business because he had made bad decisions based on wrong things, just trying to kind of promote himself. And she had this unconscious association with getting attention and feeling excited and being in the spotlight with her father. And this part of herself was trying to keep her from being like her father, was trying to protect herself from becoming something that she didn't want to become unconsciously. And it was only by understanding that, by bringing it into consciousness, that she could see what the conflict was. The conflict was between, I want to be in the spotlight, I want to have attention, I want to perform, I want to express myself, and I'm worried that doing that means I'm like my father. I am a narcissistic asshole. I'm going to ruin things. And when we understood that and the function it was having, then when the anxiety came up as she was trying to meet her physical goals, she could understand them and say, that's not relevant here. I'm not like my father. My motivations are not what his are. I am here for my audience. I am not here for myself. The excitement and the putting myself out physically is a totally different thing, and she could let it go. But she had to understand what that part of her was trying to say in order to change the equilibrium. It's a lot like the movie Inside Out, in fact, which is a movie I think that portrays the idea of conflict so well. Freud really thought of conflict as basically being between a wish and a fear. In Inside Out, it's more nuanced. And in fact, Inside Out is based, as I understand, on some neurocognitive new ideas about fundamental emotions. There's joy, sadness, anger, disgust, and fear. But in the movie, the real conflict is between joy and sadness. And of course, they're characterized, so they're people and they look like they're having a conflict, but they exist inside this girl's mind. And joy wants joy to happen in this girl's life. And she's worried, so it's not actually fear. She has her own fear, joy does, that sadness will get in the way of that. And of course, the whole movie is wonderfully epic and goes through all kinds of areas of the mind and deep memories and letting go of memories and all of this kind of thing. And ultimately, the resolution comes where everyone realizes that all of them need to have a seat at the table, including sadness. And sadness has something very important that she has to bring to the decision making and the life and the experience that occurs. They have to have a seat at the table. And that's the message here with conflict, is that these conflicts come from somewhere and we need to bring their voice and give them a seat at the table. Even in the movie The X-Men, and of course the conflict there is between Magneto, the villain, in, you know, current time, but with the X-Men movie that goes back in time, we see that Magneto was actually Professor Xavier's best friend. That's how they started out. And it's the dialogue between what seems to be the villain and the other, but seeing like what their relationship is, what they have in common, that we really want to do in this concept of dynamic conflict. So I want to get a little bit more into the theory behind dynamic conflict. Now, dynamic unconscious is different than just the unconscious. The unconscious is something that human beings have always known about. Even ancient people refer to it. There's the idea of differing states of consciousness. I'm not going to remember all five. There's sleep, there's deep consciousness, there's transcendent consciousness, there's regular consciousness. All of these are in the Vedic texts, which are, of course, like 4,000 years old. And then among the Australian Aborigines, there's this idea of the dreaming, which is sort of mystical, mythological, but it exists in the now, and it's a different kind of consciousness. And of course, in Genesis, Joseph and others, prophets, have dreams, and dreams are unconscious. You know, they know this. And even now, neuroscience shows that we have an unconscious, obviously, and it does things. It consolidates memory and has other functions. It's important. But the difference here is that when we talk about a dynamic conscious, it's an unconscious that has forces in it. And that's where psychoanalysis is unique, what it adds uniquely to the idea of the unconscious. Freud was really the first to say that there are repressive forces that push things into the unconscious. And that's really the force he was talking about. And that we're not aware of them, but they affect our behavior and the things that we do and how we feel. A great example of this comes from the show Marvel Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., which is based on, you know, the Marvel comics, but it's about the agents, not the superheroes. And in season 4, they replace the regular Agent May with an android. But the thing about the android is she has a program that she's not aware of that is influencing her in ways that she's not aware of. I mean, I couldn't think of a better example of the dynamic unconscious, except it's an android and not a human being. But you get the point. The other thing about the dynamic unconscious that is important, like I talked about psychic whiplash, these forces that kind of pull us back to equilibrium. This is what we call signal anxiety, or what Freud called signal anxiety. It's a signal because it signals that there is an unconscious conflict. These feelings of anxiety, like my patient had, or guilt or shame, like, oh, people are going to think badly of me, or I'm worried about something. And often it seems irrational, but it is a signal that there is an unconscious conflict. So when we feel that way, we can say, maybe I have mixed feelings about this. Maybe the thing that I want, I'm also afraid of. And that is the basis of an unconscious conflict, something that we have a wish for and we are also afraid of. So as I always like to do on the Psychonaut Show, I like to give you a little bit of history of where these ideas come from, because the ideas themselves are dramatic and full of stories, and they help us understand stories and create stories, like in the comic books and the movies that I talk about. But the history of these ideas are also full of stories. And dynamic conflict is really front and center with Freud, and it does relate to the episode on the return of the repressed, the first episode that we did. And I kind of wanted to get a little bit more into Freud because, just a lot of reasons. For example, a friend of mine's son wanted to see a therapist, and she, you know, he's 13, so she is the one who talked to the therapist and tried to decide who was appropriate, and she was asking me my opinion. And she told me she didn't like one of them because, quote, he even mentioned Freud, like he must be crazy if he mentioned Freud. And the thing is, you know, Freud actually said some really, really important stuff. He was born in 1856. So what is that? That's 161 years ago. And he was born in the outskirts of Austria. You know, he's associated with Vienna, but he really wasn't born in Vienna. He was born in some, you know, boondock town. And he was born Jewish in a world that didn't really like Jews too much, didn't allow them access to equal education, to careers. And he had to work really hard to get where he was. But he was also a product of his age, the Victorian era. And the Victorians really thought that they could understand everything in the universe. They felt like it was a big machine and all they had to do was kind of take it apart. Of course, we don't think that anymore, not even on a physical level. Quantum physics has and string theory and multiverses has taken us away from that idea, but that's what was going on at the time. Anyway, that's a little bit about Freud, but when I was looking back and trying to think, where did this idea of dynamic conflict come from? It's really not one place in particular. It's really all through his work. And this really goes back to the beginning of Freud's theorizing that led to the field of psychoanalysis. Now, he worked on his theories over his whole life and developed ideas, but they really centered around this idea of conflict and what it is. And he wrote many things, of course, but some of his most interesting writings are his case histories. The case of Anna O, the case of Little Hans, the case of the Wolfman and the Ratman, and Dora, and Fraulein von Herr. And in these case histories, they're like little novellas where he brings the characters to life, and we find them so interesting, and his interaction with them is very intimate. He really was a great storyteller, but of course, it's from his perspective, and he also is trying to put forward his theories with these case histories. I sometimes imagine, I wish that someone would write a play or make a movie where we get to see all these characters kind of come back to life and interact with each other and talk about what was actually going on in their minds, what they think of their inner worlds, and also what it was like for them to work with or interact with Herr Professor Freud. The very beginning of Freud's ideas occurred in 1895 in a paper that he wrote with his mentor, Joseph Breuer, and it involves the case of Anna O. And it's so fundamental, it's worth going back. And as with some of Freud's famous cases, we actually know who Anna O was. Her name was Bertha Pappenheim, and she actually became a very important figure in feminist history. She was a social worker and really became important in her own right and in her own career. But at the time, she presented as a patient who had trauma because of the death of her father. But her presentation, remember, this is 1895, earlier really, she had convulsions, paralysis, hallucinations. The family didn't know what to do. They thought she was crazy, but something really terrible was going on. Freud and his mentor theorized, as she spoke about the things that happened to her, the death of her father and the feelings that she had, and particularly the angry feelings that she had towards him. And even now, if you have anger towards someone who's died, it's problematic. You don't feel like a good person. But imagine back then, you're the daughter, it's, you know, middle 1800s. She would never have wanted to feel like she was angry at her father, but she was able to in the course of the conversation with Breuer. And then she was able to be relieved of her symptoms. And so Freud and Breuer felt that there must be something to this, that if a patient can talk about the trauma, then they are relieved of the symptoms. And this is where they came up with the idea of repression, that conflict is an unacceptable feeling, in her case, anger, or a wish, in other cases, that is not allowed entry into consciousness. It is repressed actively because it's unacceptable. And conflict, according to them, was, as I said, both a wish and a fear. That's basically the idea of dynamic conflict. So, as I said before, Freud was a Victorian, and the Victorians felt that they could explain the universe if they just were able to reduce it down to its basic elements in whatever field they were studying. And Freud felt that he could explain all of human behavior by reducing it to its basic elements. And for Freud, those were the drives, and that's what all conflict was based around or came from, were the drives. And there were only two drives, sex and aggression. Now, Freud mostly, as is well known, he mostly focused on libido, but he also considered aggression as a drive. And of course, we think of conflict more in a more complicated way these days, but sex and aggression cover a lot of territory. Now, in terms of aggression, I will give you another example, and this time it's from a TV show. I just binge-watched the Netflix show Glow, and I don't know if you've seen it, but it occurred to me that the main character and a big theme of this show is the conflict that this woman had with expressing her aggression and her competition. We see her at the beginning as being very nice and hardworking and all this, but she kind of hits a wall, like, I'm a good hardworking girl and I'm just not getting a job. And in the context of this wrestling show, she has to really embrace her aggression, and the other characters, the other women, have to as well. They have a conflict around this. They don't want to. They're repressed. There's something telling them not to do this. And I will say the movie Bridesmaids by Judd Apatow also shows this too, this kind of censoring of aggressive, competitive drive for women amongst each other. And I have to tell you that in my own practice, I see this. Now, my own little theory, and I'm sure this is just my bias having grown up in the 80s, is that things are worse now than they were then. And I remember lots of portrayals of strong women back when I was growing up then, and certainly from pop culture and music. There's Madonna, of course, and Annie Lennox and Cyndi Lauper and Tina Turner and Chrissy Hynde from The Pretenders and The Go-Go. I mean, it just goes on and on. And I know that now we have Beyonce and Lady Gaga and Katy Perry, but I just feel like things should have gotten better since the 80s, and they've actually gotten kind of a little bit worse. But as I said, that's my own bias. But let me tell you about an actual case in real life where a young woman came to me with a conflict around her aggressive drives. And this was a woman who was in the tech industry, which of course we know is highly male dominated, but this particular woman was very respected by all of her colleagues, all of her male colleagues and a few women, and she was respected by the management, and she was in fact very ambitious and hardworking, and she negotiated for a promotion and a raise, very, very hard in a tough environment, and she was very successful. No one gave her a hard time about this, but she could not sleep after getting this promotion. She developed a case of insomnia, really, and it was understanding it was her own conflict around her aggressive drive from messages that she got when she was young, that she needed to get people to like her, that was the most important thing, which she was not following through on. She was following through on her aggressive drive, but the repressive force against that, the societal message that you need to be nice and people need to like you, and that's the most important thing, was causing her anxiety and interfering with her sleep. And it was only by uncovering that we were able to come to that understanding, and the anxiety subsided. So what is the lesson here? It's this. The idea is that when we have sometimes a problem with something, when we feel afraid or anxious or something's just getting in our way, it may be because we have an unconscious conflict. We have mixed feelings, but some of those mixed feelings we're not aware of. We may feel like we want something, but another part of us doesn't want it or is afraid of it. Or on the other hand, we may feel like we're afraid of something and we're not aware of the fact that we might also want it or be excited by it too. Now, when this kind of thing happens, sometimes people say you need to look at your fears as an enemy, something that wants to take over and prevent you from reaching your destiny, and you have to fight against them because otherwise they'll win. And sometimes that works if you are able to just kind of change your thinking. But a lot of times when we have this fear or anxiety, and remember the word signal anxiety, it signals that it's about something. And instead of fighting against it, if we practice what I call psychic diplomacy, like in the movie Inside Out, where all of the different parts get to have a seat at the table and make decisions and take action together, when we use that fear and anxiety to look and say, what's going on here? Where is this coming from? What is it trying to tell me? And we give that part of ourselves its voice, then we can come to a resolution that gets us to success. And sometimes we can even come up with a solution that we might not have even been able to imagine before. This is Dr. JKB signing off. Since we are exploring together, you make the journey all the richer by subscribing to the show on iTunes. And even better, if you also leave a rating, it helps others to find us. If you have a story about how the concept in this episode helped you figure out something in your life, send it in, please. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter at Psychonaut Show. Show notes are on the website, thepsychonautshow.com. And if you leave me a question, it may well be an inspiration for an upcoming episode. Until our next trip, judge nothing, question everything, and remember, there's always a reason. Bye for now. All the patient stories presented on the Psychonauts show are created by me to illustrate an idea. Any resemblance to actual people is purely coincidental. The Psychonauts show was created and produced by yours truly, John Burton. Art and web design by Hunter Creative. Post-production and sound design by Julio Gonzalez of Zimmer Media. Zimmer Media can be found online at zimmer.co. That's Ximer.co.